Welcome everybody to another episode of the Everything Horror Podcast. My name is Paul Dolsky, and joining me is the lovely fiance
Tessa Baker.
And joining us and all his facts of ancient filmed and fun is none other than the Dick himself, or should I say Richard. And he missed out on the Dark August episode with the Quip Critic crew, but here he is in all his glory to return in a Disney fact fun, because Richard is a very ancient keeper of all things Disney information. If you need to know Disney, Richard, or Dick, should I say, is the guy you want to go to. So, Richard, welcome aboard.
Thank you for that introduction. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're welcome. I'm
looking forward to this.
Pleasure. This should be
fun. Yeah. You know, so before we get into it, so we're, for everybody knows, as we kind of just mentioned it, we're talking about Disney, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, which came out on October 8th of 1949. So this film is obviously 73 years old now, and the running time was only 34 minutes. There was quite a bit of directors like Erdman, Penner, Joe, and Winston, which I'm not going to try pronouncing these last names because I feel like I'm going to butcher them, and I don't want to do that. But if we also know Bing Crosby, who was the narrator, and can we just stop for a minute and just realize this one particular fun fact about this Legend of Sleepy Hollow is that the narrator, Bing Crosby, he started the narration for The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, but because of World War II, they stopped it because he got drafted to go to war, and he literally came back from the war to finish his narration. Now that is pretty badass, as I may say.
This is also the last film, I believe, that they were doing because of the war efforts that were split films, where they took all kinds of mini cartoons, because they had Disney made an agreement with the government to do propaganda films in exchange for him not going to war himself, and he turned out his studio doing that, but he still wanted to do movies, so they didn't have the time and energy to put entirely into a full motion picture, so they did these mini cartoons and they'd splice them together and make movies. That's where you get Melody Time, Fun and Fancy Free, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, and so on and so on. I think there's four or five total. The Three Caballeros, the Los Amigos. It's just one of those weird, fun, interesting tidbits that all happened because of this wartime period.
That much I did not know either. So the more you know is what I say.
See, you're full of fun information.
Or strange information.
Strange as well, but also fun.
Fair.
Yeah. So real quick, just to give anybody a little quick rundown, is in a small town, a brewing romantic rivalry with a local tough and a school teacher culminates in a terrifying ride into the night. It's basically the plot that we get for this little film here. Now, I don't normally do this with new guests, but Richard, let's put you on the spot for a minute.
Okay.
So, you know, let's go back to your childhood. What do you remember the first time ever seeing this little animation of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow from Disney?
So, I'm going to disappoint you a little bit on this one. I don't know if you've ever heard any of our episodes about my past. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness, so we didn't have holidays. And this would have classified as a holiday film. So the first time I accessed the film is when it came out on VHS as Fun and Fancy Free. I mean, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Sorry, that apparently video is still stuck in my head. And when it came out, I knew what it was, and I had seen the Wind in the Willows portion of it, but I had not seen the Sleepy Hollow portion. And at that point, one of my parents had passed away, and the other one was still grieving to the point where my mom was not really as strict with what was watching, and I was becoming an adult anyway. So the pressure stopped being there, and I started to open up and be able to see it. So I actually saw this when I was like 16 or 17 years old. It is still magical.
Well, that's good. And magical. I don't know if that's supposed to be a pun because of it being Disney or what, but
No. I mean, I love the fact that, like, Billy Bletcher, you know, he did other stuff for Disney, as Clarence Nash did. And Clarence Nash is considered one of the nine old men, one of the Disney animated crew, and one of the originals. And it was just nice that they had included him.
Fair enough. All right, so, Tessa, what do you remember for your first time ever seeing this little short film? Or short, should I say? Are you on mute?
Oh, she must be.
Yep, she is. Yeah, so what do you think of it?
I was really young when I saw it at the time. I was a kid, so like I remembered bits and pieces of it, and then I went back and rewatched it very much later with you, and I was like, oh, now I remember all this, because I had seen it originally when I was a kid, so. But it still holds its, I guess, interest or wonder, for lack of better wording. It's a cute little take on it.
Or, yeah, exactly. It's a nice little short, easy, right to the point. Very little dialogue, if I may say. It's just mainly just the narration that really helped move the story forward. Basically,
yeah, I have it playing in the background, not to interrupt you, but I have it playing in the background again, and I'm kind of just the nostalgia of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, I remember getting the VHS copy of it when it was Disney's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow favorite stories. I don't even remember the original. But Richard here told me, oh, that's not the original case or something like that. And I was like, oh, really? And then he sent me the picture of what the original case of the VHS was. And what a difference. Richard, what do you want to say to that?
Well, so there's the shorter animated one has had several releases. So I did send you the original, but then they released it in a paper case called Disney Mini Classics, and then they re-released it in a paper case again, which is the favorites that you remember. Before, okay. And the weirdest thing about those releases is The Wind in the Willows was released the same way. And oh, in the own miniature. Yeah. As in those same little stories in both editions, they'd always kept them separated from that point on. They hadn't put them back together until the mid-90s.
That's so interesting.
I think it's a way of marketing, and it was a way of them literally doubling up on their money, because a VHS tape back in the early 80s was $70 or $80 for a rental price. And people would then, you know, pay the $3 or $4 to the rental store to rent it over and over and over. So if they were making that kind of money off half the title, why not do it? It's kind of like their VHS releases that they did for the TV show episodes, like The Little Mermaid, Tales from Under the Sea, or The DuckTales, or, you know, Chip and Dale. They would have two episodes per tape at $25 even for a regular person to buy. And you think, you can now spend $30 on an entire series.
So, or you can spend $15 just for volume one and get like what, 7 episodes now?
At least, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. It's interesting to see. But I also, and this is a little bit of a tangent that has nothing to do with what we're speaking, I also find it funny when people are complaining that they have to pay, oh, Disney Plus is going from $15 to, say, $18. Those are not real numbers. I'm not pulling up facts right now. But everybody's upset that it went up $3, but I can remember when the Disney Channel was $25 a month just to have. And that was the Disney Channel, which was like 15 to 25 titles that they rotated throughout the month periodically, so you could hopefully catch it on one of the airings. And I'm just flabbergasted on the way the mindset is of the world today from the world we were in. And now you can go back on topic. I apologize.
No. That's great. That's actually a good point, you know. And that also brings up the next topic of, like, so as I stated, I had the VHS copy of the favorite stories for the Disney Legend of Sleepy Hollow, timeline. So anyway, so I just want to look at the back of this because I'm trying to remember what year this was. So this is 2014 when this came out, and I didn't get this until maybe 3 years after it came out, but I remembered it. And I bought the Blu-ray DVD digital copy version, but they made it so that it's Disney The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, which I kind of feel is a little bit misleading, because when you put it in, the first thing you see is Mr. Toad and not The Adventures of Ichabod, or it's not The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow is basically the finisher of...
So- the answer to that, the reason being, is that Bing Crosby was the head actor, the actor with the most notoriety at that point. And I don't know if you realize this, actors are listed in a specific order from how they're registered with the Screen Actors Guild. And I don't know full details of it. It's only in the past 5 years that I learned this, that there is a pecking order. And depending on what your job is and your status and your title. So at this point, Bing Crosby was the big one to put on the poster. So Bing Crosby's going to bring you in more people to watch that feature. So they can call it The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. And that's the reasoning behind it, is they put the bigger feature name in it. And they probably should have reversed it, but they left it as the... I think you would rather end it with Ichabod than end it with Mr. Toad.
Honestly, now that you say that, that's almost like saying, why do we go to concert? We go for the headliner.
Right.
You know?
So, exactly. Yeah. So it kind of works kind of in the same way.
Yeah. 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 Now that you mentioned that, I also, to throw it out there, I also bought this little plushie that Tessa found me from the Disney store of the Headless Horseman. That was $15 well spent, as I may say. So... And it looks like this is not available anymore unless you find it from a third party. So, and you're looking at, I think I thought $20 to $30 if you were to try to grab one. I know this was a limited release from Disney. I just didn't know how many. I know when it first came out, it sold out real quick. And then it, because of the demand, I want to say, they made like, I think it was like 100 more. And then once that was gone, it looked like that was it. So,
Also, if I can interject something else too, I wanted to check fact myself because it didn't sound right. Disney Nine Old Men. There are several names that kind of match up to Clarence Nash, and Clarence Nash is not one of the Nine Old Men. He's the originator of Donald Duck's voice, and I knew he was, but I wanted to clarify if he was one of the Nine Old Men. He's not, so please ignore me for everybody who heard me speak off the cuff like that because I mixed up my names.
Fair enough. Now, so let's get into this. So at the beginning, we see this lovely, like, you know, atmospheric town of Sleepy Hollow. We get this nice little melody, I may say, where it's like very catchy. And it's like, you know, who is that walking down the street kind of thing. And we see this thin man that looks like he has like, his head is almost like inspired by a vulture or something, just because of how big
his nose are.
And his, like, oh, how bulbous his nose is. Yeah. Yes, it's just out there. It's like the first, it's like the thing you're instantly drawn to on his face is that nose.
And I swear they did it on purpose with the way they brought him into the town, with him reading the damn book with his eyes closed, as I may point out, and he still knew where he was going. As the new schoolmaster, what's his name? And then you get the way Ichabod, you know. And then Ichabod finally shows him, reveals himself, and it's like, like Tessa was saying, the first thing you see is his nose. And then you kind of look at his ears and go, yeah, what the hell is going on?
Yes, the nose and the ears. Like, I swear if they were any bigger, they would be, like, almost Dumbo.
Dumbo?
So, have you guys seen a photo of Bing Crosby?
Yes.
It's basically a caricature of him. A lot of the animators used to do that so often. They would try to put a little bit of the voice actor into the character. And it's super fun. If you actually look at Bing Crosby, you look and see, well, what are his features? The first things you notice are his ears and his nose. And they did extenuate on it, but yes, super fun. Did.
Oh, yeah. And it was so amazing. I loved it. And I loved how he was very superstitious. As he's walking with the book, he's about to walk underneath the ladder. And he somehow, manages to know he's about to and corrects himself. He somehow notices a black cat is trying to walk in front of him. And he redirects him back to the house. And I think there's a couple other things that I feel like I'm missing, but we get the point of this. He somehow can have the book in his face, eyes closed, and still know what's going on around him. Amazing. Amazing. I think I am missing something now that I think about it, and I think it had something to do with around the Brom Bones.
Yeah, because Brom Bones notices that he's superstitious and that he uses that later to his advantage.
Yeah, that's how he basically scared the bejesus out of Ichabod at the party. By Ichabod, I'm kind of going a little bit further now, but when they're at the party, Ichabod knocks over the salt, and then he's got to pick up the salt and basically, what's the correct way, toss it over his shoulder, his left shoulder. And that's where Brom Bones is and I don't know what is with that weird wink. Who's going to see him wink when he's looking at Ichabod doing that? It's I got it. I know the perfect story. But, yeah. That's it. But, so we get into the little town, like I said, with this weird catchy song of who the schoolmaster is. We finally figure it out. Yada, yada, yada. And then one of the funny things that I like is the school scene where he's walking around checking everybody's lunches. And the way that they did that was amazing, because I feel like when he got up to that one student where he was trying to pick on the teacher, Ichabod, by making him be a flamingo or something, or some sort of weird bird with a long neck and a long beak. Anyway, the point to this is he was about to whip him for doing that, but then he notices his lunch bag. And then from there, that's where the film even suggested that, instead of whipping the kid's butt because of this, he wants to be friends with the kid so that way he can go over to her house and have delicious food, as we kind of saw with the roasting turkey dinner that they had.
Food.
Yeah. I just thought that, that little bit, though. And, that's what I was forgetting. As he's walking down the street, when we're talking about who the new schoolmaster is, that was the other one. We see this lady walk out with a pie. He helps her open the door. Opens up the book and there's a pizza pie in there. What the hell, man? That's amazing. That's amazing. From there, I think it's just mainly him basically trying to get with the choirs of the three women that are just madly in love with Ichabod. Right, as Brom Bones is trying to get the dog to howl during the chorus, and then the women faint and have their weird flabbergasted moment where they're all and then
it's very Gaston-esque.
Thank you.
From Beauty and the Beast, very much.
And that had to be another favorite part of mine, just because of the whole, the faces, especially the lady that is wearing the green dress, her face. It's just her opening her mouth up a little bit, and her eyes are it was just funny. It was funny.
The whole dance scene with Katrina and Ichabod and Brom and the lady in the green dress was just hilarious. That's that's kind of what I was smiling at and stuff while you guys were talking, because I just found that so comical how they were going.
What I've seen meant business when she was trying to hold on to Brombone's thumbs, both his thumbs, just to dance with him.
Yes.
And give him a whirl around everywhere, basically, just because of her dancing style, I may say. She had a very unique dancing style. Very rapid feet moving, if I may say.
A little quick on her feet.
Just a little bit, yeah. A little too quick. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess from there, it's really the party, and everybody has a good time. They have a blast. That's when the superstition comes into play as well. And Katrina and Ichabod are also I think they're still trying to win each other over, is the way I kind of look at it. It's like Ichabod needs to dance and basically show her father that he's a good man, which when he was looking for a light for his big corncob pipe, or some sort of pipe, he pulls out a magic match and lights his pipe for him. You know, it's just like that sort of weird, suspicious, like, where did he pull that out of from kind of thing. Because it seems like when every time we see Ichabod, he always pulls some weird stunt. Like, let's look at Brombone real quick when it came to Katrina getting some groceries, right? Everybody, like, kind of walked away, like, yeah, I'm not going to deal with this because Brombone is here. And then Ichabod stepped up to the plate. And as they're going back home, you know, Ichabod had Brombone carrying all the stuff after the dust settles. But he shut the door on Brombone and all the groceries go everywhere and just, yeah, there's a couple parts with that, but that's just what I mean. Like, some of the weird, like, mysterious thing that's going on, but that's also the Disney magic, you know, of what makes Disney great.
And I really like how it emphasizes brain over brawn.
Brawn.
I mean, the two are completely clearly rivals for this girl. And every time Brombones is just doing it to all the masculinity stuff, and Ichabod is there to slight each one of them, and he does it so slyly, it's manipulated, and it's very wonderful.
Oh yeah, it's for sure. And yeah, so babe, what would you like to talk about the superstition part? I know Richard kind of mentioned it a little bit, but would you like to talk about the superstition?
Sure. This is the part where, like, Ichabod's trying to eat his dinner or whatever, and Brom's going around telling the story, and you could just see, like, Ichabod sweating bullets and putting 50 pounds of pepper on a hard-boiled egg and then eating it and then regretting it afterwards, and watching Brom, like, split a hair with a knife and everything, and, you know, emphasizing pointing out the window to the dark woods of Sleepy Hollow, and just seeing Ichabod just crippled with fear. Like, even now, like, I'm sitting here, and, like, I'm watching Ichabod on his horse going out into the woods, and he's just like, you could just see the look of fear on his face, like, I really don't want to be out here. And, you know, after Brom telling him about all the superstitions and stuff, he's seeing shit out in the woods, you know, stuff that, you know,
which in fairness can happen.
Yep.
I would say that is also another favorite part of mine, real quick, is the shot with the hands almost like covering the moon. I love that.
Yes. Yeah, and he just saw, like, what he thought was a ghost, but it was just a tree.
Creepy tree, yep.
Yeah.
With two lighting bugs or something like that, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the way all that atmosphere is right now, what Tessa's talking about, is like so. I don't know. I just love it. Like, I loved how they. And Richard can correct me too, but I'm pretty sure that is all done by painting.
Correct. So it's called the multi-plane camera, and they had 9 sheets of glass, or I believe that they're glass. That's how it appears to be, that they would hand paint, and then they would be able to move them, and the video shot down through, catching all the movement as once. It's a very meticulous process.
They made it work, though. They really they did made make it work. Work. It's brilliant.
Yeah. If you get a hold of the Reluctant Dragon, I don't think it's a standalone. I think it's part of another. Either way, they give you a tour of the Disney Animation Studios, and they kind of show you how that works. And it's fun to see. But what really the animators at the time were having such a blast because they set it up to be such a dark room, and then the fire that Gaston, I'm determined he's Gaston now, that Brom Bones is in front of, and he's telling the story, and you see Ichabod, that fire really helps like add to that fear and dread. And when you're a kid, you really pick up on that, because between seeing Ichabod's reactions and that fire and that flame, you can almost picture yourself there, and it's a little haunting.
And I think that's why I've always loved that atmosphere throughout, from the time he starts telling the story to the end, really. It's like they did it just so good, and with that technique using the glass to make the movements go, like, you know, like nobody would have thought of that now. It's all digitally, whatever.
Disney doesn't have a 2D animation studio anymore. They had to hire out for Mary Poppins Returns for the animated segments, which is super sad.
Yeah.
Super sad, and they used to have whole buildings devoted to it.
So do we blame Michael Eisner?
No, this happened after Michael Eisner left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Michael Eisner left in 2000, and all of that really started to down spiral about 2005, 2006. Shit. No, Michael Eisner is the one that saved the company. Fan of his, even though toward the end he did some bad things, but he did like save them from bankruptcy. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about, are those terrible sequels.
Unfortunately. Some of them are bad for some of them, I felt, but there is some where I'm like, why? Like, did you guys even watch the original to, like, put two and two together? They like, that's the way I felt like.
They pumped them through their Japanese and Australian TV division. So it was TV animation, and that's why you had no quality. Yeah, and true. I don't know who did the scripts. I'd have to look that up. Tell you that they are as equally disappointing as the remakes are today.
Oh, no. So, Tessa, continue a little bit. So,
yes, please.
Yep. Yeah, so he was singing stuff like the creepy tree with the 2 lightning bugs.
And I kind of crack up a little bit at the fact that his horse decides to take a nap and rest his butt on the gravestone. Yep. And then Ichabod has to motivate him to go. And then like he starts getting freaked out because like the little reed rod things that you see in swamps start like wrapping on the tree trunk, and he thinks it's the headless horseman galloping.
Yeah. Yep.
And then he realizes that it's not the headless horseman. He grabs the reed rods and he starts like laughing, like, "Oh, I'm just going crazy. There's nothing." And then all of a sudden, you know,
yeah, yeah,
freaking headless horseman comes out of nowhere and starts chasing him around, and he does like a 360 spin out on the horse because of the mud and everything, and gets a face full of mud and goes running off in the opposite direction, and still gets chased by
the headless horseman.
Yeah.
But Richard, which have you going to that? Describe to what the chase scene now, like what you can
remember. The first thing where my mind goes when I think of that is that iconic scene with him holding up the pumpkin and the flames going up through it as he throws it at him.
Yes.
That scene is so iconic that Tim Burton even used it in his version of Sleepy Hollow, because everybody goes to that scene. And I mean, it doesn't matter what age you are hooked into the TV at that moment. It just grapples you, and you are in that moment running from fear. And I could put myself in his place, because I had this terrible, I saw this movie called Jeepers Creepers, which I know you guys must have seen ages ago.
Oh yeah.
This is way back. It first came on DVD. I was over at a friend's house in the middle of the night. We watched the movie. I'm thinking I'm unaffected. I leave his house to walk home. So, and I have to walk 2.5 miles to get to my house, maybe 3 from where he was. And I thought I was perfectly fine. Every time a car came up on the road, I literally jumped out of my skin. And it's amazing what mental can do. And I feel so bad for Ichabod during this chase scene. And when it actually really turns out to be real, and you just see every, you know how it always say you have 7 things that you have to face before you die? And you see him face all of them, boom, 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 boom. It is great. And then he's galloping toward the bridge, and you see it, and you're like, oh my God, is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? And every time you root for him, even if you've seen it. And then that stupid flaming as he hurls it right at the bridge. It's amazing.
Let's go back to it a little bit, but during the chasing scene, there's some interesting moments as well where his neck gets caught on a tree branch, which makes him go over the branch onto the horse.
It goes right horseman. Back on his horse, yeah.
Well, first it goes onto the headless horseman, and then he's looking at his horse, and like, wait, what? And then you have that scene again.
At the way it's drawn with it. Yeah, it's awesome, because you see the horse, and he's like, no.
Yeah. And then he gulps, and that's when he gets hit again with the same branch to go back on his horse.
Yeah, that's where my mind went, was right when he gets flipped back onto his horse.
And another fun thing is, and I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. I think it's when Tessa was trying to say the spin out or something, but it's as he's approaching the bridge, I think he swirls, turns, but he twirled on the horse so bad that you start seeing the camera work go away from the bridge. So now you're like, wait, why'd you go on backward? But then he looked down, and he's looking at the back of the horse. So he's got to correct himself. It's hilarious.
It's very physical comedy. It's as if you were watching Don Knotts. It feels like a Don Knotts moment in a film, only it's animated.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. And then from the end, really, we just see, as Richard would put in it, with that from the throwing the pumpkin, which, yes, that is a gorgeous scene throughout the entire thing of him throwing that flaming pumpkin. But we finally see the ending where it's basically a couple horse tracks, Ichabod's hat, and then the smashed pumpkin that was thrown. And then nobody seen anything ever again of Ichabod, which... So my theory is, because of the whole superstitious thing, I think that was Brombone doing.
It absolutely could have been. Because he was a rival, and he was clearly in the way.
Clearly.
And he is the one that initiated the superstition.
Yes.
And this tale.
Yep.
So I would have to agree that there was a little bit of a murder in Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, that's the way I've always looked at it, and I'll stick to it. Unless somebody could tell me otherwise, that no, this is in fact what supposed to be a real thing. But yeah.
But what a way to go.
Yeah, exactly. Which we don't even know what really happened. So did he like, how did the ending put it? Like, some people say that he is still alive. He married a wealthy lady in a distant city. Looked like he had, like, 6 kids or something. But then they say, like, the folks of Sleepy Hollow know that, no, that is not true. He is not alive because he was spirited away from the Headless Horseman as the film goes.
Now, the New York Historical Society actually have stated that it is believed that Washington Irving, the author, was inspired by an actual Hessian soldier who was decapitated by a cannonball during the Battle of White Plains in 1776. And so that's supposedly the basis of this story, which I find fascinating too.
That's why I think I've always loved it, because I'm into the supernatural thing as well. So it is quite possible that because of what Richard just said, you know, that is a great way of creating a horrific, superstitious entity, I guess I would say. Because I feel like saying monster or creature is really, like, not the right term. So no. Entity, I think, would be the correct way, because, I mean, it is quite brutal to just stumble upon somebody without a head, but they're still able to laugh and somehow carry on like they would if they were still alive, and still be able to see, as if, like great example would be like Tim Burton's work, you know, like some of the scenes with the Headless Horseman is just so phenomenal. And, like, you know, when you see, like, with Tim Burton, how the Headless Horseman and his had a sword and some sort of, like, axe, like a hand axe. I'm probably not remembering the correct term for this, but yeah. But if you see a Headless Horseman that can wield those two weapons, you know you're in trouble.
I think it's pretty, yeah, it makes sense that it was linked to a Hessian soldier.
Yeah, and I've actually read that too, which is right. Really nice. And I actually have a limited edition book of Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and Other Stories that I got. And I actually have a Washington Irving biography book thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, he did Rip Van Winkle, which is also another fascinating tale. And all of the what's unique is all these tales are always located in New England. So yep. they're very much a part of our culture now.
Yeah. And I feel, well, yeah, I mean, it hit big too, because once it really got going with how popular it got, you know, what's really sad is I don't even remember what the name of the town used to be, but the town in
Tarrytown.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, they decided, well, because of it being so popular, that town was basically what Washington Irving would describe in his story, they decided to change their name to Sleepy Hollow, New York. So what better way to, you know, keep the legend of Washington Irving work alive by even doing that? And Sleepy Hollow, from what I've seen, because I can't say I've been there, is pretty goddamn cool.
It's wonderful.
It's on our bucket list.
Okay, yeah, you definitely should go down. It's a blast. I guess they do a lot around Halloween. We did not get to go around Halloween. I went down to actually tour a castle down there that is used in a couple of the Dark Shadow movies and Winter's Tale and that vampire special from the 70s, the kid special, the night they saved Halloween or something like that.
Oh, okay.
That castle was used, and we wanted to go tour it. And at the same time, we stopped we went to the Sleepy Hollow graveyard, and we saw Washington Irving's grave. There's a lot of other famous graves there too, and they've recreated the bridge for the Headless Horseman, which it's super cool. It's a fun time.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's still there because honestly, I haven't seen any pictures of it as a weight week, but they made like a big montage of the Headless Horseman somewhere in the middle of town.
Yeah, the big metal, the big metal statues. Yeah, yeah, super cool. Yeah, I got photos of that. So you'll have to go poke around on my Facebook and find it because it was fun.
Oh, I have one. My friend sent me a picture of it because he's like, dude, you need to go here because I know how much you love the Headless Horseman and yada yada. I'm like, yeah. And now every time I see a picture about it, it's just like, God damn it, I need to go.
You do. So, it is. It's pretty rad.
Yeah, and I guess. Tessa, what did you think of the ending of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow? You know, because you did step away.
How Brom Bones got Katrina in the end, and Ichabod ended up marrying a widowed, like, woman with a lot of kids.
Supposedly, that was the rumor. Yeah, that was the rumor that he was still alive. Yeah. And, so one thing Richard and I agree on is that we feel Brom Bones was the Headless Horseman, and that Brom Bones basically annihilated Ichabod Crane to completely
wipe him off. Yeah, he shot his nerves to hell by scaring him away, playing on his superstitions, and, you know, utilized it to his advantage. And he's like, well, I know one way that I can guarantee that I'll get Katrina. All I have to do is use Ichabod's weakness, his superstitions against him, and scare him away, and she's all mine.
And he noticed those superstitions right from the get-go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even the way the animation is done, you can tell that he's collecting information and using it for his own good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think what really put that nail in the coffin was when Ichabod spilled the salt. That was the final nail, because that's when he finally figured out superstition is definitely his weakness. So I guess, to wrap things up just a little bit, since this has been out for 73 years, and I know we kind of talked about it for, like, as we watch it almost every day. I try to watch it every year around the time because I feel like that's when I've originally seen it. So I feel like it's appropriate. And kind of like with Tim Burton, Sleepy Hollow, like, I'll have to watch that now because it's the time of year for it.
Now, did you watch the annual Disney's Halloween treat? When they had it, the special? Okay. I was just curious because every year they took clips of a lot of their Halloween and darker stuff and they would put it into, I believe it's an hour special. But it was called the Disney Halloween Treat and it aired for years every year on Halloween. And of course, Sleepy Hollow is very prominently featured in that. And I was just curious if you had saw that when you were a kid or came across it.
No, but now that you got me thinking, would they have that type of thing going on for Disney Plus now?
I don't believe it exists on there. I'm pretty sure it was a TV special. Let me pull up the actual 1982 themed episode of the Walt Disney Presents. 47 minutes. It is an hour.
Okay.
The special was also released under the title Scary Tales of Halloween. And it started to be shown on the Disney Channel in the 90s. Every year they would change out the cartoons just a little bit. So it's known as a Disney Halloween, Disney's Greatest Villains, or Disney Halloween Treat, all sharing the same, all the same clips. Madam Mim from The Sword and the Sword and the Stone, Night on Bald Mountain from Fantasia, Piece from Pluto's Sweater cartoon, a piece from Mickey's Parrot cartoon, Donald Duck and the Gorilla, Puss Cafe, Catnip Pluto, Pluto's Judgment Day. I'm sorry,
what was that one? Did that just say Catnip Pluto?
Catnip Pluto. Yep.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're little sequences that they would pull from the cartoons. Then they have a segment with Captain Hook, a segment of Cruella de Vil, a segment with the Evil Queen, a segment with Cy and Am from Lady and the Tramp, ending, of course, with Ichabod Crane and the Headless Horseman. And it was even released so much as onto VHS. But it seems to not be a thing anymore. I don't know exactly why, but it went literally from like 82 to 94. So wow. It's a good chunk of time, but I was just curious because this is this time of year and the Headless Horseman seems so prominent that it just brings it up every year automatically in your mind.
Exactly. And no, it's probably because I never actually did have the Digi Channel unless I went to a babysitter's house.
Initiated on CBS, but the Disney Channel, yeah.
Battle? Yeah.
But once again, remember. That was in the 80s. So it didn't go to Disney Channel until I think it was 91 or 92.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't remember that. But I will say one thing. Even though it is 73 years old, I still say it lives up to this day. I watched it for the first time ever, really. You can't really beat the art style anymore. And now with the way, with everything being 3D, it ruins it, I feel like. It doesn't create... like what I stated before when Tessa was talking about the creepy atmosphere of the creepy tree. You know, once you take away the painted background, that's it. Game over. You can't really make anything that much scarier anymore. Because at least with painting, you have the ability to basically create anything just by making the shadows or some sort of light and effect to make it more sinister looking. Or on the edge, as Richard put it earlier, with the atmospheric pleasure of the ominous feel of fear. And I don't know. I mean, I just always feel like this will always be on my watch list till the day I die, basically. I don't care. And if you haven't seen this yet, then what the hell is going on with this situation?
You've had 70 years. You don't have an excuse.
Yeah. There's no excuse.
And there are other versions of Sleepy Hollow, like we were discussing them first, but this is... it's not the origin, but it is the biggest one from the past that is known. Because before that, I think it was just three silent films.
Not just that, but I think wasn't this technically the first animated one?
Yes, this was the first animated one. And like I said, I believe it's the first one even with volume, because like I said, other than the silent ones, it looks like it goes to that one, and then it jumps right into the 80s. So yeah. It's withstood by itself for a long period of time.
Oh God, yeah. Oh yeah. And it's actually... I don't know. I mean... I guess because of this being off the air, I'll put it on the record for this real quick. It's like, as we were talking the different Sleepy Hollows even before recording, you know, it's really shocking when you start typing in Sleepy Hollow or Legend of Sleepy Hollow what you actually find. There is a lot. And, you know, like, I'm pleased that Richard and I finally figured out which one we were looking at or trying to find because of how many different takes there is on here. I mean, I alone have probably watched maybe 10 different versions of Sleepy Hollow.
I have to agree, yeah. Whether it be a parody in a TV show to an actual release movie.
Yeah. Like, not to go off topic again, but you know, just kind of bring back memories when I went to school in middle school. I know I'm going to have Richard probably start looking this one up, but I don't remember anything about it because it was in school, unfortunately, Richard. But
okay,
we'll have to jog your memory.
Sure.
So this one involved Ichabod Crane. I believe this is also the same one where it involved... the people play tricks on Ichabod by trying to nail all the desk and stuff to the ceiling. And then they were trying to pick on Ichabod by trying to dress up as the Headless Horseman. However, the people that were trying to pick on Ichabod, they ended up running into what was, to them, the real Headless Horseman. So they freaked out themselves. So... I know that's probably really, like, not enough detailed, but that's honestly all I remember about it. But I saw it in middle school. So I don't know if that can't be Jeff Goldblum one at all.
No.
But,
and you said the Headless Horseman, like everybody sees him?
The Bowies, the one that were trying to dress up as the Headless Horseman, are the ones that saw the Headless Horseman. What they thought was the real one, because obviously they were trying to pull a prank, but they couldn't succeed because they ended up running into what they believed to be what the real Headless Horseman. So
it's telling me it's the Hollows. Is that not it?
Not the one with Nick Carter.
Okay. That's why I wanted to ask you, because yeah, that came up almost. What is that?
I don't know. But anyway, real quick, Tessa, what do you feel about, you know, basically in are you in agreement of everything of what I was saying? Like how this is like a memorable experience?
I'm in agreement with you with what you said about it. I pretty much couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, what do you like about this film? Like, as you watch it and rewatch it, like, what do you like?
It's nostalgic. It's, you know, it still holds over after, you know, the 70 plus years it's been around. You know, it still holds up from memories I had as a kid to being an adult now. It's just nostalgic for me.
Yeah, now it's something that we can show our daughter to, and hopefully she likes it enough that she wants to watch it every year with us.
Yes, exactly. Our daughter is currently watching Frozen.
That's the sing-along car from version. It. Oh, that's fun.
And hey, Disney Paul. Just confirmed Frozen 3, too. So, just in case nobody knows that yet.
You know, it's super fun because the very first movie to ever have a sequel was The Rescuers, with The Rescuers really? Down Under. And it was theatrical, and it was the late 80s. That took them a long time, and now they're doing threes in theater. That question for you, Paul, that Sleepy Hollow that you're talking about, was it live action or animation?
Live action.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do remember it being live action. The only thing I just really remember about it is just there was the brown bones in it, but it was like they were trying to scare Ichabod by dressing up as the Headless Horseman, but they themselves ran into the Headless Horseman.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm still going through stuff right now.
It's good. This is what I'm talking about. Like, this is why I kind of hate not knowing much more about it, but that's all I remember about it. But Richard, real quick, so what's your take on this? Like, how do you feel that it holds up 73 years later?
I feel it's going to be one of those things that is timeless. I think that the music in it is dated. If I had to date anything, like it's very dated. It's almost winsong. It's very it hits high notes that makes you just go ooh for a second, which actually adds to the vibe. But despite being dated, I think it feels like it's a piece of history. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that is as iconic as Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. I just feel that it's a staple in popular culture. And I mean, it's going to be, it's parodied, it's mentioned, it's linked back to from all kinds of sources. I just don't see it ever going away or ever becoming obsolete. And virtually, it's even, you know, it's something that should never be culture canceled. There's no reason to. There's nothing that can really upset anyone.
I will have to agree with that. I was thinking about that too. And then one thing I actually thought of is, you know, how lucky we are that Bing Crosby was able to even finish it, like I said at the beginning, like going to war and stuff. Because, you know, let's just think for a minute. Like, if he were to have died in battle of World War II, I wonder what that would have done for the narration then. Would they had to have found a whole new narrator or what? So, I mean, I don't
know. I don't know how far finished it was. It really depends. Fortunately, that didn't happen.
Exactly. I'm glad it didn't happen, but it's just like what could have happened, you know?
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, they could have recast it. Or Basil Rathbone was doing the Wind in the Willow side of it. They could have pulled him over to take over. Or Walt was also known to do things himself, and that would have also been a possibility.
That's true. But I think, since we haven't really talked about that, but I feel like his narration really fit that story. And I almost want to say Walt Disney at the time was probably looking for a very specific narrator to really read those lines, to really make it feel unique and almost atmospheric at the same time, you know?
Right. Agreed.
So, I mean, I guess with that being said, is if you haven't watched it yet, I'm pretty sure it's on Disney Plus, and otherwise, there is Blu-rays available of it, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, so you can get it. And that was, I think, the smart move with Disney, that they brought it back in Blu-ray form. And I think that goes well with what Richard was saying, is that, you know, this is going to be a continuous thing. So who knows, maybe in the next couple years, we might actually see a 4K release of it, you know, since everything is upgrading to 4K. And on that note, I would say I would totally recommend this, and I don't know what else to say except for you need to watch it if you have not ever seen this.
Please, please support physical media, because you don't understand how important it is out there. And, you know, things that are streaming won't always be streaming. Things that are streaming can be edited and changed at the drop of a hat. And anytime you have a chance to own a classic such as this on physical media, please support the companies that make it, and please go buy it and treasure it in your own library, so that should something happen or something unfathomable where they decide to pull it down, you still have access to it.
Fair enough. And the last two things I will say is, and if you are a big fan of the Headless Horseman and the Disney version, there is a book that is for kids. It's the Golden Book, I think is the right terminology. They have that for the story as well. And for $20, there's also a Funko Disney Return of the Headless Horseman game.
Saw that. It looks adorable.
And exactly. It makes me want it even more, because I want to play this now. And maybe we can all get together with Richard and play Disney games. Or we could always play, Cards Against Humanity or something. We'll figure it out.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think that's really it for everybody. Now, before we sign off, Richard, you are part of the great podcast known as the Quip Critics. Now, what would you like to tell the listeners from your point of view about the Quip Critic, and where can we find the Quip Critic?
Quip Critics is something that I believe is on Spotify. I'm not really part of that portion of my own show, so I am, but I believe it's on Spotify. And Quip Critics is basically me and two women that actually go and... It originated as a Disney podcast where we wanted to tear apart Disney films and change what your childhood memories were to be trauma. And then we've kind of upgraded that idea and expanded on it. So now it really is movies, TV shows, you name it, anything media. And quite often we do pick things apart and tear it apart and bring up a lot of negatives. Every now and then there's a surprise and we all like something. Or we occasionally will have one of us like it where the other two hate it, vice versa. There's so many different, and we discuss movies. It's been in existence a little over a year, and it's starting to get on track where things are going smoother for us, and we're getting to learn each other's vibes. But I found a lot of new fun things I never would have watched without them, and I hope I've done the same thing for them.
You know, like I told you guys in like the group chat and stuff, like it's always a riot to listen to you guys because of the whole tangent that you guys go off sometimes because something reminded you of one thing. And then I will say you guys have gotten a lot better.
Thank you.
That's great. I think Tessa still has yet to really listen to you guys, but I know she's been busy with work. Just like with me, I used to be able to listen to podcasts while I work. Now I can't, so I'm really far behind with some of my podcasts.
And we have a member of our crew. Her name is Kat, and she works overnights and has the ability to listen to podcasts while she works. And so she goes through a lot. And she sometimes forgets that other people don't have that kind of time. And so, you know, anytime you give us, we appreciate. And on behalf of us, like starting episodes ran probably 3 hours, and you know we're down to like an hour and a half now, which is great. It's cut the time in half. But anybody who spends three hours listening to me, well, God bless you.
Well, God bless me, apparently, because I try to do it. I used to listen to two episodes of you guys. Well, I used to listen to almost two episodes of you guys a day. So that's like, yeah, what, 6 hours?
Right, but we were long. We were long back in those early hours. Yes. Really, really long.
Yes. Well, Richard, you know, on behalf of Tessa and I, because I know Tessa's eating for a minute, but we appreciate your time, and thank you for coming on to talk to Disney, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Thank you for the invite. This has been a blast. And quick mention out to other classic Disney films that you guys probably haven't seen that are Halloween. Please go watch Child of Glass, Watcher in the Woods, Return to Oz, Something Wicked This Way Comes. There are some good creepy Disney films out there that you don't know are Disney, and you probably never heard of. So give them a chance.
Definitely. And until next year, until we talk about probably another type of Sleepy Hollow movie, with maybe it might be the Jeff Goldblum one next year, because that was really good. I enjoyed that one myself.
Well, it was a pleasure chatting.
This has been super fun chatting with you guys. And also one other thing, avoid Hocus Pocus 2. Just had to say that.
Avoid Hocus Pocus 2. You'll be incredibly disappointed.
You will soon find out why, because we will be recording a Hocus Pocus episode soon. And on that note, thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, congratulations. You all deserve some alcohol or cookies, or in this case, something child-friendly. Because we already know that...
Yeah, you want to save the alcohol for Hocus Pocus 2.
Yeah, right?
Well, we already know Brombone shared the alcohol with the animals around town anyway, by busting the barrel and letting them drink out of it. But on that note, everybody, have a great rest of your time of week, whenever this gets out. So it will be a happy Halloween for sure, but there will probably be a little bit more episodes to come before October is up. And until then, make sure you keep your eyes open, because you just never know what's going to happen, because something like the Headless Horseman might jump out at you. But on that note, Tessa, what do we always like to tell the listeners?
We want you to stay
scary.